It's Bob McCowan. It's John Shannon.
You know, there are, just for the record, Bob, there are people on Twitter now that spell my name that way.
I know. I see that.
If my parents were alive, they wouldn't be very happy, but that's okay.
Well, why not? I have managed to extend your name into... more than two syllables.
Could you please extend my career?
I've been trying to do that, which is why you're here right now.
Oh, thank you. Oh, God bless you, Bob.
As they say, John, I've done more for you than your mother. She only breastfed you for 9 months. Now.
Only nine?
Whatever it was. Well, she carried you for 9 months. That's what it was.
That's very, you know, it's amazing you bring that up today, Robert.
Yeah. And the reason is?
No, it's okay.
Let's go right to our guest.
He's a cool guy, right? I tell you what, I know you know, old players, you know, but this guy's got something to talk about. He's a fun guy.
I love old players. But the incurious thing is, through this miserable little career that I've had, I've never had an opportunity to talk to this guy.
Really?
Never. No, never met him, never talked to him, never interviewed him, to the best of my recollection. I mean, I may be embarrassed here to find out somebody's going to dig something up and say, oh, you had him on the show. You know.
I will tell you right now, though, this guy was hard to interview when he was a player because he was so intense.
Yeah.
This guy wanted to win so badly, wanted to perform perfectly as a player every game, whether it be in St. Louis or Philadelphia, or in Carolina.
And believe me, his reputation precedes him because I'd heard that.
Yeah.
In any event, we're going to get a chance today and we'll find out whether he's happy, miserable, congenial, cooperative, or none of those things. Rod Brind'Amour, when we come back after these messages. It's McCowan. It's Shannon on the program for this day. And with us, the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, the Jack Adams Award winner, former Stanley Cup champion, Rod Brind'Amour is with us. Well, first of all, quite an interesting last few days for you, renewing your contract for the next 3 years with the Hurricanes and the winner of the Jack Adams. Congratulations. Quite an accomplishment.
Well, it's like I said, when it happened, it's an organizational award, right? I mean, there's no coach that can take this award and go, oh, hey, look what I've done. I mean, if you don't have the horses, number one, you're not winning it. Let's just be fair. And then you got to have good people around you. And that's what I'm really lucky to have. So it's good to be recognized, but it's, I think even better for the organization.
So, Rod, the contract was announced on the 17th. By coincidence, you wore number 17 for so many years. But truthfully, when was the deal done?
You know what? No, that's a good question. The deal would have been done in about 3 minutes with Don and I. We had it figured out in January. I said, okay, here's the numbers. This is it. He was like, okay, yep, that's pretty fair. And, we move on. But I said, there were some contingencies. I said, we got to get all these other people around done. And unfortunately we had 10 people downstairs work with me that their contracts were up too. And that's what the holdup was. It just takes time to get all those people kind of figured out. And for the most part, we got everybody done. So that's what happened.
Does that include Dean?
Well, Dean's the one guy that's kind of hanging out there, and he's welcome to come back. He's just trying to see if he can, see what else he can get. And I'm okay with that. He's got to do what's right for his family first and foremost. And, but he knows that he's welcome back. So that's kind of a little trial period for him.
I'm not sure if you're aware, but Tom Dundon, the owner of the franchise, was on with us, a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, maybe.
Maybe six weeks.
Oh, was it that long?
Yeah.
And we talked to him extensively about, your situation, your contract. And he was very clear. He said he didn't want to own the franchise if Rod Brind'Amour wasn't the head coach. So you got a friend and an ally there for sure.
Tom's been great. Listen, he takes a lot of heat, which is I think it's because he's new to it. And, you know, he's not backing down from what he wants to do and how he wants to do things. And yet, you know, I don't know an owner that's can't be an owner that does more for his team than this guy. As far as he is involved in everything, you know, from you name it, from the smallest thing to the biggest thing, from players. And from day one, he said, hey, look, I'm going to give you a fair fight. And that is, we're going to spend the same amount of money everybody else is spending on players, which is something you can't say was done here, you know, for many, many years. Trust me, I was a player here. I line up and look across the way and be like, this is not a fair fight tonight, but we got to figure out how to win. And he's saying, we're going to take that element out of it. And now you just got to go coach him up. And, you know, I think a lot can be said for that.
Well, he's a fan of yours and he's a fan of the game, but is he a hands-on owner? You would know better than anybody.
Oh, yeah, he's on everything. And that's, and some people think that's like, oh, that's a bad thing. And I actually think it's the opposite, because when we say, hey, you know, this player's got to go and he's like, okay, you know, or we want to get these players, like we're in the conversation at least with all this stuff. And he listens, right? Like he has his opinions and he'll throw them at me and Don, and he throws it all the time. Every day he's testing us on things that I don't know that he believes it. He's just throwing it to see if it sticks. But you know what? If we can tell him it doesn't or show him it does, you know, he's all about getting better. And that's, at the end of the day, that's all you can ask.
How would you describe your coaching style?
That's a better question for the guys I probably coach, but I think I just try to be myself. You know, I just try to be honest as I can be. I mean, there are things you can't be so honest. I've learned, you know, you got to sugarcoat a little bit, but really at the end of the day, just be yourself. I mean, there's no way I could do this job if I was trying to be, you know, someone else or different coaching style or whatever. You learn from everyone you're around. You guys know that. And then you just got to go out and trust your instincts.
So I ask coaches all this all the time. When you say something behind a bench, is there somebody you hear? Is there somebody in the back of the mind says, oh my God, I sound like Bill Dineen, or I sound like somebody. Is there somebody that comes to mind for you?
I don't think so. I would hope not, you know, I mean, I hope it would be, that's me speaking, but I know there's everything that I probably do come from somewhere, you know, someone. I mean, I got, you know, even this Jack Adams Award was great. Brian Sutter was the guy that presented it, you know, and I just think back to him when I was a kid, really, he coached me as a kid, and the stuff that I realized how much I've taken from even that couple years with him, you know, transforming as a player. But am I still using that as a coach? Probably, you know, and there's and a lot that I wouldn't be doing, right? Like there's, you know, the times have changed. And so, again, you through all experience, you take the good and the bad.
Well, Rod, I was going to ask you sort of the same question John asked, but let me rephrase it a little bit. So you're not a duplication of anybody that coached you. You don't think about that. But the best coach and your favorite coach can be two different people. In fact, quite often it is. Who is your favorite? Who is the guy you were closest to?
Well, that's a good question. When I played, it wasn't all that long ago, but man, the years go by quick.
Yeah, sure.
You didn't have relationships with the coaches, you know, like the year we won the Stanley Cup in 2006, I went into the Peter Laviolette's office twice the whole year and had two conversations with him the whole year. I actually, when I took the job as an assistant coach, I didn't even know what the coach's offices looked like in the back, because I'd never been down there in 10 years that I've been at that rate, because we just didn't, it's not how it worked. And now all the players know what everything, like they're down there, they run the show, right? So it's a total transformation. But the guy I probably enjoyed the most was only for a year, and you mentioned him. I think John was Bill Dineen. I mean, you couldn't have it any better as a player. I'll just leave it at that. I mean, it was like your dad coaching you. And, you know, we had Kevin Dineen on the team, so his dad was the coach, but he treated us all like his kids. And so when it was good, he was good. When it was bad, he was hard on his kids. But in a totally weird, loving way, if that makes any sense. Like, it just never felt personal. It was always trying to help you, and that was pretty special.
So I have been around the NHL longer than you have, which means now I'm really old. But I used to hear about you, particularly in St. Louis, as a player, that you were really hard on yourself. You beat yourself up if you didn't play well. What changed? And do you beat yourself up as a coach?
It's a great question, because we got a kid in our lineup now. This is going to be a star, that's Sveshnikov. And he reminds me of myself in the way he handles things that don't go well. Yeah. You know, he's hard on himself. And I'm sitting in the coach's seat and I'm like, man, I'm, you know, Bill Dineen now. Cause he would say, kid, you got to relax. And I'd be sitting there going, how do you say relax? But it's true. Now that I've gone through it, so now I'm trying to think, how do I get this coach talk through to this kid with him not to think it's, you know, what I did back when I was a kid. Oh, come on. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Right. Like, because it's important. I mean, that's just from experience. Right. So it all, I guess you learn from all of it as you're going along. And I already forgot your question.
Well, no, just how hard, I mean, you were so hard on yourself as a player.
Yeah. Am I hard as a coach? Yes. And actually did an interview not too long ago with the great coach from Duke, Coach K, and on his show. And I asked him, like, how do you do this? Like, not just, you know, eat yourself up over and over. Like, because when you win, you're supposed to win. So it's like, okay, how are you supposed to be that excited? You were supposed to win that game. And then when you lose, it's like twice as, you know, that was all your fault, right? Like, that's how you feel as a coach. Or, and I always say, when I played, you worried about your mistakes after the game. When you're a coach, you worry about the 20 guys' mistakes because they're all yours. So it's not a very fun job when you do it that way. And he was all, his great comment was, you can't have a rear view mirror. Like, you always got to be looking ahead. And I joked with him, well, he never loses. So it's a little different, right? When you just can win every night. But I think I'm hard on myself, which, you know, I think you almost have to be, though, to keep pushing, moving forward.
Well, yeah, you made a valid statement. I mean, when you look at Krzyzewski and his record, and okay, granted, it's college basketball. He's a Duke, and, you know.
Well, you only have the guys for 2 years. Rod could have a guy for 10.
Well, I acknowledge it's different, John, but, I mean, the truth of the matter is that if Coach K lost one game in a year, he probably was disappointed. You know, you can't say that in professional sports, and certainly not in the National Hockey League with 82-game schedule. Rod Brind'Amour is with us. How do you find over the years that you've now done this job, have the players changed dramatically? Do you talk to them differently today than you did when you first started? Because we hear all the time about the difference between, you know, when John and I were kids, you know, before you were born, and how coaches ruled the roost and what the coach said goes. Mm-hmm. Well, you've gone through kind of an evolution of when you were a kid, the coach was what he said went. But now it's more of a partnership, isn't it?
Totally. Totally. If you don't think it's that way, you're not going to survive. I think, I don't know how you can coach the way it was coached back when we did. It won't work because these kids have never seen any of it. You know, they won't even understand what's happening. And so you got to adapt with it. I think what's helped me is never stepping away from the game. So even when I stopped playing, I was right into the coaching on the assistant side. So I'm always involved. And then having kids of my own, to be honest with you, at that age, going through it, I feel like I can relate to where they're coming from. And so that's helped. But yeah, you've got to adapt with the times for sure. And how has it changed? The athletes today are way better. Like, they just keep getting better and better. They take care of themselves way better. They've owned skills coaches and diet. Like, they have everything figured out, right? They got all these people helping them to be better. That's makes them better. It also makes them worse too. At sometimes they're so reliant on everybody else to tell them, get that feedback. And sometimes it's not good feedback. Sometimes just shut up and go do your job. You know, like, it's all you got to do. But they're always looking for the anchor, you know, if that makes any sense, instead of just, let's just focus on you being the best you can be. You don't need to have this validation all over the place. So there is a little bit of where, as a coach, I'm trying to instill that. And I know in the background, they've got three guys telling them something else, you know? So there is all that you have to kind of, I guess, deal with, but the athletes are so much better because they are 24/7 now.
How do you, actually, that's a really good point. Cause I've heard other coaches say, you know, players have, he has his own shooting coach, his own stick handling coach. And he's telling the guy different things than you're supposed to be telling him. How do you manage that?
Exactly. Well, they all say that they're not. See, there's the key, John. They all go, well, no. Their guy's not telling them to do it differently. They're just, I'm like, please, just let's cut that out. We know he's, you know, we had a guy, and I won't mention his name. He's no longer with us, but he had his own guy that would break down shifts that he would send his shifts to. And then he would tell him, I say, that's what where our job is. I got three assistant coaches that are sitting here willing to work with you, go through your shifts. Oh yeah, but you know, and then like, where are you going with this? Like, yeah. This is not going to be helpful, right? But they all got, you have to figure it out. Now we got him out of there because we knew that wasn't going to work, you know? But this is what is going on today. And I guess you take the good and the bad, and the good ones get it. The good ones, I don't think have three people working for them, but they're dialed in.
Well, let me get a little more basic than that. When you're a kid, coach says, this is how you do it, and you learn. The older you get, the less instruction you get, I suppose. But now, when you get to the National Hockey League, how much teaching do you actually do?
That is an unbelievable good question. Simple. But if you really break it down, once you're at this level, how much coaching do you need is the one question. And I, as far as to getting from point A to B, am I going to make you a better skater at 19 years old than you are now? We can work on it till we're blue in the face. And there'll be skate coaches on here that'll tell you, oh yeah, I can. Okay. Maybe a little better. You know, if we put in the time, I'll just tell you, I'll give you the ice time. We'll spend 20 more minutes after practice working on skating. I'll get you to be a better skater. But you know, it's, I don't know how much teaching you can do on your skills and what you already have. You are who you are. For the most part, you'll get stronger just naturally. If you're 19, by the time you're 22, you're in the gym, and that'll help your skating. But to actually improve on it, you know, I don't know how much better you're going to get. So how much teaching goes on? The teaching happens on how to play the game away from the puck. That to me is where all the teaching comes in. We don't teach Andrei Svechnikov what to do with the puck. I'll tell you right now, very rarely. I mean, I'll tell him sometimes, hang on to it more. You know, but I'm not telling him what to do with it. Not telling Netcash how to, you know, shoot the puck. The guy knows how to shoot the puck. He's better than anyone I've seen. So we're not going to work on that. But I guess what? They need a ton of work on when they don't have the puck. And that's all the kids coming in. They need that more than ever, especially the younger kids that were really elite. The elite players coming out of junior hockey, I find they play with the puck their whole life.
Right.
They never had to play without it. Now they get the NHL and it's 90% of the time they don't have it. That's a problem. So that's where the teaching comes in, I think, at our level.
Is that the downside of all these great skill players?
I don't think it's a downside because you can't teach the offense. Like, you can't put it in them.
Right.
You know? So if you have that, if you can teach them how to play defense. It just takes a while. But you're not going to teach a kid how to rip a puck and go bar down and, you know, on the fly and take credit, pat on the back. That's not you, you know.
You talked about that you and Peter obviously had a good relationship when he was the coach in Carolina, but you weren't in the office very much. How do you use your senior players on your club to talk to teammates? I mean, you have Jordan Staal is one of the salt of the earth great guys in the game. How do you use guys like Jordan?
Yeah. So first of all, that's where you get lucky as a coach to walk into a locker room. I walked into it. I had Justin Williams sitting there on the sidelines.
Right.
Is a layup of layups that you could ever have where I need a leader. And, oh, by the way, this guy hasn't been tagged yet as the leader and he's sitting in your locker room. Oh, thank you. You know, boom. So he goes in and now everything starts to, you know, take shape and then he leaves, but Jordan Staal's sitting there ready to do it. And so that you have to have that. You have to have a guy that does it right. I mean, if you don't, you're as a coach, you're going to be in big trouble. It's just hard. It makes it way harder. Now I got a guy that does it right. He takes control of the locker room. You know, I'll come in and you put your message and how it goes. And then he's got to put a stamp on it. And that's what happens on the good teams. They all have that. And, you know, we're fortunate to have that here.
Rod Brind'Amour is with us, the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. We got more to come. Stick around. Back after these messages. It's Bob McCowan. It's John Shannon on the program today, as always. And Rod Brind'Amour, the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, is with us.
Hold on. Jack Adams, winner. We can't say that enough.
Well, I was about to get to that, if you can be patient.
Well, no, I'm not patient. I'm like a hockey coach. I'm never patient.
Right. Got to get to it.
Yeah.
Three-year contract extension and the Jack Adams Award winner as a coach of the year in the National Hockey League. You were a captain of this team. This is one of my favorite topics because everybody has a different perspective on it. In years of gone by, the captain in many cases was voted on by the team in the locker room. And that captain's responsibility was definitive. He was theoretically the only guy who could talk to the referee on the ice, or the assistants could. We understand that all that has changed. But what do you see from a coach's perspective that the role of your captain is?
Well, we could talk all day on that, but to summarize it, you have to be the guy that does it. I said, do it right. He's got to be the guy that he's got to come to work every day, be competitive and do it consistently. That's the whole key, I think, is consistency. When you want a guy to be a leader, he's got to be every day doing it right. And then no excuses. So if the best player is your leader, that's number one. That's really good. Doesn't have to be your best player, but it's got to be a guy everyone looks up to, you know. And if you have that, the role of that guy is to set the standard, set the bar. He's the guy that everyone looks to and goes, okay, that's the way we have to do it. And then it's up to you as a coach to make sure you hold everybody accountable to that standard. And generally, though, if you got a great team and a great leader, he holds everybody accountable. You don't really have to do it.
So how often in a year do you think you would go to your captain to have him convey a message that you want to convey, but you don't really want it to come from you?
Yeah. Well, I've been doing this 3 years. So Justin Williams was my captain. And in the first year, I don't think I went to him one time. I think he got it. So the good ones get it. They know when it's time to jump on the back of the coach's message. Or sometimes even the best times is when, you know, you'll be coming in ready to ream them out because you know it's time and the captain's already doing it. You know, you walk in the locker room and you're about to go and you hear captain going off. You turn around, go back to your coach's office. Okay, you know, he's got it. That's the best way. You know, if I have to do it, it's not right. It has its moments, but it's much better coming from them. So in the 3 years now, I go to Jordan's a little less vocal, but it's actually even more impactful when he does it. So now, you know, he's had his moments. So I jumped in probably a couple times this year and say, hey, Jordan, wouldn't hurt to, you know, and he's like, I got it. I'm already on it. You know, like, so I'm lucky that way. I don't have to micromanage that kind of flow of the room.
So you got knocked out in the second round by Tampa. How would you, after a really, really impressive winning the division season, how would you define this season?
So you have to almost break it down into two. I really do. I think the regular season is its own animal. I think you should get credit for having a good regular season because it's hard to have a good regular season. It's hard to go, you know, in our schedule, 82 games this year, 56, but crammed in with everything that went on. And to do it right for that extended period of time, I think deserves some. But you have to start over. It's a new – this playoffs go. It's like the second season. Mm-hmm. And you want to take everything you did coming in and move it forward, but it doesn't really work that way. So to answer your question, we had a good regular season. Actually, a great regular season.
Yeah, you did.
We lost 10 games. We lost 12, but the last two I count as throwaways because we didn't play our guys. We were trying to rest and, you know. So that's pretty impressive. The playoffs, I thought we had a good first round. And then we were like here against Tampa and you can't give them that. Like you're not going to beat them. You know, we took too many penalties. It really comes down to that. I watch them now. They're getting one power play a night. It's a different game than 7 and 6. It's a different animal. So we got to learn that lesson. And that's where I think the Islanders have a little more experience on their side. They understand they can't take penalties. They're not quite as aggressive. They're kind of, hey, we're okay playing this game. We don't have to take it to them. We'll get our chances, and you can see it's paying off for them.
That's the patience of I think, a veteran team, though, isn't it?
Totally. And understanding. I mean, we talked about it, but our guys are hungry, and that's part of it that makes us good, too, is we are aggressive. So there's a fine line there that you have to kind of play, and I think the experience of it, though, to your point, for sure, is an advantage.
We sit here in a hockey market and look at a market that almost failed. Raleigh almost didn't survive as a hockey market for economic reasons. And you know, it took a while to get the fan base motivated. Is Raleigh still a market that likes its hockey, but doesn't know as much as other markets do about it?
No, here's what I think. I think number one, we had some success in years and then it would fall right off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just been able to just sustain a couple of years of good, solid play. It'd be a different story here. You know, this place is crazy about hockey. It's just number one, it is a small market. So let's.
Yeah, we know that. Yeah.
I don't even know if there's a million people that live in this area. Right. So like right away, that's not a very big market, that especially when it's basketball country and college football, basketball. I mean, that's what they've known.
Yep.
There's a huge following now though. Like we've really taken it to another level because we've had some success. So imagine that, you know, you have a little success, all of a sudden you're the hot thing in town. And then COVID hit. Right. So that is interesting to see how this can all bounce back. But I think it is definitely a hockey market. Now, is it big revenue market? You know, that's a whole nother discussion. I mean, I know our ticket prices are lower than everywhere because that's just how it has to be. I know there's way less opportunities for the sponsors and all the stuff that brings in the money that creates the revenues for owners. That's where we don't match up. But that I don't think changes. That's just the way it is. As far as fan base goes, I mean, I think it's great. I think it has to rank up there. If you just did per capita or per person, like the people that are involved in hockey here, it's crazy. And one of the advantages they have here is because it's a college market, everybody here roots for NC State. I had my hat because they're in the World College World Series right now, and I'm good friends with the coach. And so, but, you know, or you're a Duke fan or a Carolina fan, they all hate each other. It's the weirdest thing. You can't be a State fan and a Duke fan.
No, I get that.
You can't do it. So, and I learned that right away, day one of coming here. So, but the Hurricanes are the one thing that they all can kind of, people here can kind of come around. So now that we've had success as a team and we're getting better, I think it'd be interesting to see this, that question you gave me, is that in 3 or 4 years from now, are we even going to be talking about that? I don't think so.
I was telling the boys before we started that 2006, I don't think I've ever heard a louder building in my life than those four games of that Stanley Cup final against the Oilers. And then when you literally snatched the cup out of Gary's hands, I mean, that is one of the greatest trophy presentations of all time. Give me that cup. I mean, that was as loud as I've ever heard any building, Rod.
Yeah, and that's another point about what's great about down here is the people here come to a game, they enjoy it. They don't sit on their hands. You know, they come before. You come to the playoff games here. I was driving up 3-4 hours before the game. There's people in the parking lot cooking out. Yeah. You know, they're having a good time. They know how to have fun when they come, and they don't sit on their hands, you know. And so it's just a great atmosphere, and I think there is something kind of special. Our players get it, that we have to do a little more than maybe up in Toronto. You know what I mean? Like with the fans, we have to engage them. And so our guys do a little more. Obviously we're more accessible, I think, than probably most teams are with their players, but that's part of it. And then that's actually pretty special too. So that's all good. Going back to that time, that was, you know, that's the greatest memory of my life, really. I mean, You dream about that, right? Like that's what I dreamt of my whole life since I was a kid. Okay, I want to win a cup. I want to be, you know, have that opportunity. It's funny you said snatch the cup, right? I want to set the record straight. I couldn't hear like anything. So I didn't know if you said take it. And I wasn't waiting around, right? Like I didn't want to miss my chance. This was it. So it wasn't meant to be disrespectful or anything. It kind of came off that way. But, you know, you get, like I said, one time in life, I'm not messing up on this. Like I'm taking it when I can get it.
I'm not blaming you one bit, because you did what every one of us wanted to do when we were out either on the pond or playing road hockey. We wanted to take that thing and put it over our head. So
yeah. I'm more interested in whether you ever said anything to Gary about it. an apology or whatever, say, hey, I'm sorry. I
probably should have, because the way I got fined last year for, you know, my one time saying something, and man, 25 G's, and it was like nothing through that round. Like it was, you know, pocket change. And I'm like, that's a year of college just went out the window. So maybe he was, I should have apologized.
Hey, so speaking of coaching, you have more fun coaching your Hurricanes or coaching your kids team?
Yeah, it's way more fun to coach the little guy. That is the best age. You know, it makes it fun again. And you know why? You watch these kids just have a blast, right? Like having fun. That's what it's all about. And it's a great reality check for me, because I'll go from literally practicing on a Tuesday at our rink, same rink now, we got this great practice rink, and then at 5 o'clock I'm back out there with my guys, and you know, it's just a gong show, right? But it's just fun and they're all having fun, and I'm like, man, this is great, this is what it's all about.
I literally saw a video of you doing it between games of the playoff series.
Yeah, no, I got home and we had a day off and they had tryout at 7 a.m. so you know, I wanted to go check it out, and why not, right? I'm there, I might as well help out. And that's kind of how we do it. And I'm kind of lucky. I think, you know, Justin Williams' daughter's on the team. So it's another excuse for us to kind of hang out and get together. So it's, we have a blast with it for sure.
So take us inside a little bit, compare kids hockey in Raleigh to kids hockey when you were growing up. I mean, kids are kids, I guess, but okay,
This will blow your mind. If I had grown up in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Playing hockey, I'd have been a better player than when I grew up in Camel River, British Columbia.
Okay, so why?
Why do you think, if I ask you? Give me one. What do you think?
Because you're having more fun.
Good point. Maybe. No, because the ice time, let me tell you something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the ice went out in whatever, April or March, as soon as the season ended, and didn't start up again until end of August in Camel River. And maybe that's not how it is in other places, but here, there's rinks. The ice is available anytime you want it, all year round, if you want to do that. I'm not saying that's the right idea, but just even to practice, to go pick up a stick and puck and pay your $5 and go out. Now it's hard because literally it's 100 kids out there. But back when I got here 20 years ago, like that's how I trained in the off season. I would work out at our place, pay $5, go on the ice, and no one would be out there, do stick and puck by myself. Like, the ice is available. And now the coaching down here is actually great because all these ex-NHL guys are coaching their kids and it's helped the program so much. But it's interesting. You're right. Hockey's hockey everywhere, I think. As long as you have good people kind of influencing the kids, it's all that matters.
That's the other secret thing. And one of the places you played when you started in St. Louis, there's a ton of former NHLers that have really made an impact in minor hockey in St. Louis. I suppose we're going to start hearing and seeing kids a generation from now coming from the Carolinas.
Well, for sure. There's been a couple sniffing around, and there, you know, a lot of college kids, you know, my son included, like still playing college hockey. And I think there's another wave though, because they're better now. Like I look back 10 years ago when my older son was on his team, and now I'm coaching that same level coming up, and there's just way more kids. Like just the way it is.
Are you competing with the attention of the kids from other sports? I mean, when you grew up in Canada, Northern United States, generally speaking, if you played hockey, maybe you played baseball or softball in the summertime, but you probably didn't play much football. You probably didn't play much basketball. Right. You know, you're in a kind of a different area now. Yeah. You compete for the kids to get their attention to play hockey.
The best athletes probably are playing other sports to start. Yeah. To start down here, like, but now with the popularity of it, and by the way, down in Raleigh, there's nobody that's you find from Raleigh. Like everybody's from somewhere else.
Yeah.
Whatever. So, like, it's hard to find someone that's born and raised here now. Like, it's just so they're all coming from other places, and hockey's becoming a lot. Like I said, the youth movement is great down here. It's growing, but yeah, you're fighting that all the time, you know. And then still, at the end of the day, what is hockey the biggest deterrent? To playing hockey is an expense, right? Mm. It's a killer. And down here, if you're good, so you're a AAA level, like guess who is the nearest team that you can play is? You got to go to Chicago. You got to go to Boston. I go back. My son now, he's playing college hockey, but when he was 15, his last year here, we had 52 games, zero home games, because you couldn't get a AAA team from wherever.
Why would they come down?
They don't need to. So you're going every other weekend. We were going somewhere.
Wow.
And that's a killer, right? That's tough.
Wow.
Oof. So I've got to ask you, in the last 16 months, the two best dressing room videos involve you. The first one was David Ayers, when Ayers came off the ice with the, and every guy shook his beer and sprayed him, and you made the speech. And then just a couple of weeks ago, when you came in and put your dad on FaceTime, and your team, I think, on its own, sang your dad happy birthday.
Yeah, yeah.
What did that mean to you?
So you put me right back there. It's special because, you know, the older you get, you guys can relate.
Like, thanks. Really, thanks.
But you only have your memories, right? Like, you go back and every day is the same, and then all of a sudden something special happens. And then 10 years later, if you have a picture or someone brings it up, you go, man, that was awesome. You know, that was special. And that's what your whole life, if you can get a bunch of those, then you got a pretty good life, you know? And so the David Ayers thing, that's just something that we'll remember forever. And being a part of it was just special, unique as hell, you know, how it all transpired. And great that you were able to share in it and be a part of it. The whole thing with my dad, obviously family, super important. And then just the way the guys just took it on their own. I didn't expect that. It just kind of happened. And just it goes to show again, kind of people I get to work with, you know, special group. And that was special, and more so for him, right? Like, I know what it meant to him to have that. It's his best birthday, you know, or ever. And I got lucky because I forgot to give him anything. So it was kind of, I got a win-win out of that, you know?
So after a game, I'm sure your dad has the NHL package. After games, you call after every game?
I call him on the way home. It's kind of, you know, it depends. If we win, I call him. If we lose, I usually just don't want to hear about it because he'll have some, you know, I should have done this or that. And,
well, he'll give you the advice?
Oh, yeah. He thinks I'm the reason that, you know, the success I've had is because of him. And there's some truth to it, but not on the coaching thing anymore. That's for sure. The advice he gives me, I usually, you know, laugh about, but it's been great for him to be able to watch the games. You know, I said he's had some health issues, so he basically lives and breathes at the TV watching us. And so it's been great.
Before we let you go, coaches, most of the coaches I think I've talked to over the years, when the season ends, they at least put hockey on pause for a while. They don't continue to, you know, they don't go to the TV and start watching whatever's left. Maybe it's part of getting that bitterness out of your system, that frustration. Have you watched it all since your team has been out? Yes.
Yeah. I'll watch right to the end, you know. And this is actually the best time for like doing like even interviews and stuff, because I don't feel any pressure about tomorrow, you know, like I'm not antsy. And so it's actually, I actually like doing them because I feel like, you know, just normal. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
sure it does.
When you're on, it's like, you're always worried about what you're saying. How's that going to affect somebody, or, you know, and there's always something tomorrow that I got to worry about. So it's like, yep. I want to get this interview out of the way, you know, like I got more important things to do. But our job never really ends because, you know, and it's good. I'm involved in the draft, you know, involved in obviously free agency. We got a bunch of guys we got to sign. So we're involved in that. And then you got this expansion draft. And so there's a whole bunch of stuff that never ends, but until probably August, right? And then you get a couple weeks where that's where, you know, you kind of take maybe some time to yourself, but that's how I like it. I just keep going. That's kind of how I think it should be.
Okay. Now you've opened the door. You said you're involved in free agency. I got to ask you, you want Dougie back?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I want all my guys back. And that's, you know, that's where coaches just, I know Donnie and Tom, they just kind of, okay, well, can't have everyone back, but I'm like, well, let's figure out how we can do it. And, and you know, I just like being in the discussions and making sure they listen, and they're not just blowing me off. They know what we need to be successful. And if I say I want a player back, we're going to try to do it. Now, I'm all for it too. If the money's too high and it doesn't make sense, I'm like, no, we can't do that because we're not going to have money to sign the next guys that we need. So as long as we make fair offers to our guys, like I feel, you know, that's all you can do. And then, you know, it's on to the next one.
And the other one is that you're not the only trophy winner from your club. Jacob Slavin won the Lady Byng. How special is he?
Oh, man, if he played in up where you guys are, you would never stop talking about him.
Yeah, well, he might be in the Norris discussion rather than the Byng.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, it's, he's that good. Great human being too, which helps his likeness. You know, it's, sometimes you get guys that are that good, and maybe they're not that good a person. You don't really root for him that much. It's the opposite of this guy. Great player. Obviously, so lucky to have him in our group. I think, and here's the thing. If we used him a little differently, like, he would be up for the Norris probably, but we don't. You know, I don't need to put him out on the power play. Doesn't even play power play. Doesn't get any of that time, like, because we don't necessarily need him to do that. So he's a special player for sure, and, you know, he'll be around a long time.
It's been quite a year for you and for your team, although I know you're disappointed that your team is on the sidelines now. I think you would agree this is a franchise that has a future, and it's not very far away. In fact, we might be right at the tip of the next real significant step that your organization takes. We congratulate you on this year, and thanks very much for taking a few minutes for us. It's been a pleasure meeting you.
Yeah, I listen to you guys all the time. I feel like I know you. So, but I appreciate you having me on, and, you know, keep doing what you're doing. Talking hockey, it's great.
Well, you do the same, and you have a standing invitation to come back anytime you like, and we may knock on your door before that happens too.
Anytime.
Thanks, Rod.
See you, boys.
Rod Brind'Amour of the Carolina Hurricanes. We'll come back after these messages. That's McCowan in with Shannon, and again, our thanks to Rod Brind'Amour for joining us. So at the beginning of the program, I was wondering what kind of a guy Brind'Amour would be, because he was prickly. For lack of
he was so focused.
He was intense.
He's so intense. But can you imagine playing for this guy? By the end of any speech, you'd go through the wall for him.
Oh my God, yeah.
I mean, you were going to go through the wall just after talking to him for 40 minutes.
Well, yeah. I mean, I love the guy.
Yeah.
And we mentioned this before, but Tom Dundon, the owner of the franchise, was on with us several weeks ago, and you know, I think you asked him a question about Brind'Amour and whether he was going to bring him back.
Yeah.
I really couldn't necessarily relate to, you know, what the relationship was like. And I know you're more familiar with it than I am. But now I get it. Now I get why Dundon he didn't want him back. It was an absolute necessity.
Yeah. Well, I think you also got a sense from Rod, like Rod's a straight shooter. Like Rod, you know, he'll go and communicate, you know, the shortest distance between two points. I mean, and I think that's what players would really appreciate. And I think he also has a great deal of respect for the players today, for what he shouldn't be coaching them and what he should be coaching them.
Well, that's the sense I got. He's a modern day coach who understands what the responsibilities and, more importantly, perhaps the limitations of a coach are.
Pretty candid.
In this
area. He was much more candid than I remember him as a player, for sure.
Well, we appreciate that. And this is a really good, still young, developing hockey team that has progressed and has significant upside. And it would not be surprising in the next year or two to see them raise a Stanley Cup. Would you be surprised?
They still have a few holes, but, you know, their core, they have such a good core. I mean, with Slavin, with Sveshnikov, they seem to have figured out what's going on in goal with Alex Nedeljkovic. So they're not a fly-by-night team. You know, Rod talked about how in his time in Raleigh, they would win a couple of years and then be down.
Yeah.
This is a team I can see being consistent for the next 6 to 7 years.
Well, and I think this owner is committed to doing what he needs to do. I mean, he has the money and he seems willing to spend it. So,
and I think he likes winning.
Oh, we know he likes winning.
Yes.
And I suspect he has no tolerance for losing.
I think that's probably fair.
So, in any event, again, our thanks to Mr. Brind'Amour for joining us on the program. That'll do it for us, Mr. Shannon, and we'll speak with you again tomorrow. For John, Bob, have yourselves a swell day, evening, or overnight. And we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.